always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Tuesday's edition of the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. It is May 14th, 2024. Happy Tuesday, 4:05 in the p.m. Central Daylight Time. We have a jam-packed show for you as the Missouri Senate is embarking on its 27th hour of the Democratic-led filibuster to kill the initiative petition reform bill. We'll see if the Republicans eventually call the previous question on that or not. That's the latest from Jefferson City, Chris. We've got lots to talk about here in the St. Louis region as well with David Stokes, the director of municipal policy at the Show Me Institute, and our one and only Dr. Randy Tobler joining us at 5:25.
Great show today, as we do always on Tuesday. I have to admit, Tim, I'm surprised that the Democrats are still filibustering the IP bill. I thought that they were going to give it the old college try, say that they gave it the old college effort and give up on it, but they're showing more resolve than I thought they would. Do you think the previous question is going to have to be called?
So first of all, I agree with you. They have surprised me as well. I thought that they also would realize, well, the cake's just baked on this one. We filibustered it earlier in session for about 20 hours or so. They're now in their 27th hour of this second filibuster against this bill. So, Chris, I am surprised on that as well. Look, Chris, tomorrow is Wednesday. As of tomorrow morning, there'll be barely 52 hours left in session. Republican leadership is going to have to decide how important this reform is to them. After 7 years of trying to get this done, you would think it would be the number one priority. They're going to have to decide amongst the 24 Republicans if 18 of them will move the previous question on this or not.
Yeah, I think the leadership does want to get IP passed. I think they're trying to keep some little bit of statesmanship, some bipartisanship. I know a lot of people don't particularly like that, but the previous question, they call that the nuclear option. When that is done, it leaves a lot of bad feelings in the body. And I think they're trying to avoid that if possible. But I think the previous question will be called, and I think they want IP legislation to be passed because this is a legacy.
It is.
Bill. This is a bill the governor can hang his hat on his way out, and so can some of the leaders, Caleb Rowden, McLaughlin. Sandy McLaughlin and others.
It also prevents non-citizens from voting on Missouri constitutional amendments and prohibits foreign interference in those elections as well. So there's a lot of important prerogatives in this bill. Chris, yes, it is the nuclear option. On the other hand, there have been plenty of statesmen who have moved the previous question in the past. Senator Mike Gibbons from right here in Kirkwood land. Senator Mike Gibbons was the leader of the Senate, I think, when I was a freshman. He moved the previous question three times. I remember 1 year, and no one would say that Mike Gibbons was not a statesman or a gentleman. Sometimes, Chris, the majority has to say, okay, we gave you your time. You had plenty of time. You filibustered this for an infinite number of hours. There's nothing that's going to make you happy on this. This is a priority. We're the supermajority. We have to move forward.
Yeah.
Are they at that time yet? I don't think so. But by tomorrow, I think they're going to have to decide if they want to get anything else done this session or not. Chris, I heard Democrats last night. I listened to a little bit of the filibuster. I heard several Democrats say, you know, we'd like to pass this bill and that bill and this bill. Well, if y'all sat down and voted, then you would get to work on those bills. So Democrats have some priorities left, too. Everyone in the Senate is going to have to decide, do they want to allow this filibuster to go to the very last hour and then move the previous question, or do they want to try to get some other stuff done?
Yeah, I think Democrats realize, being in the super minority, that having the initiative reform, the initiative petition process the way it is right now, it gives them power that they don't have in the legislature. So, you can expect them to be fighting tooth and nail over this. And one thing we've talked about earlier in the show, the realtors, of course, are adamantly against this. Tim, I remember you explained it maybe a week or two ago on why the realtors are against IP reform. I know Becky had asked me about this a couple of days ago, and I forgot the exact reason. But why are realtors adamantly against IP reform? What's the history with that?
Great question. So, and it is a historical thing. I don't think there's anything pending right now that realtors would like to use the initiative petition process for. But Chris, they used it about 8 or 9 years ago successfully to stop services, of which they are. They stopped taxation on the service profession. So realtors were worried about a fair tax proposal that some legislators were talking about. There was never honestly a serious effort put behind passing a fair tax proposal. I love the fair tax proposal, by the way. It's similar to the flat tax, fair tax, flat tax. You go to, with the fair tax, you go to a completely consumption-based tax. Now, that doesn't mean still that you tax everything, but the realtors were worried that in a fair tax system, you would eliminate the income tax and then you would tax all the consumption-based services, of which professional services like realtors, attorneys, things like that would be taxed. Now, I don't remember if that proposal had a tax on realtors or not, but they were worried that it might. Okay. So they cut that proposal off the pass at the pass, and they put a proposal on the ballot. They used the initiative petition process to say, shall there be a prohibition on taxation of service professions? And of course, everyone voted yes for that. I think I voted yes for that. And that's what it passed. So they want to maintain their right to go back to the ballot as to that taxation issue if needed. I don't think they need it any longer, but they want to preserve it. There's a whole ton of other people that want to preserve the process as it is. That would include the Arnold Foundation out of Texas. John and Laura Arnold are hardcore left-wing progressives who love ranked choice voting. They're in favor of abortion. They don't like Second Amendment rights. They have been funding certain Republicans and some Republican consultants in this state. The realtors are opposed to it. The Missouri Hospital Association is opposed to changing the initiative petition process. Of course, the left who wants to increase minimum wages and put abortion in our Constitution, they're all opposed to it. So it's mainly left-leaning interest. The realtors are not left. I'm not saying the realtors are left-leaning interest, but they're kind of the anomaly. Most of the other people who don't want the petition process changed are on the left-hand side of the aisle.
Yeah, and that's not explained to a lot of folks, and I didn't know that myself personally till you explained that. And, of course, it all doesn't make sense. Why would realtors be against IP reform? What does one have to do with the other? So thanks for explaining that.
Yeah, they just want to preserve the process. So, Chris, there are a number of other things pending, and we'll see whether or not the legislature gets to them. The anti-ranked choice voting proposal is a Senate bill that's pending in the House, and that only needs one more vote to pass. So all of it kind of hinges on what happens with this SJR 74, which the Democrats, like I said, have been filibustering now for closing in on 28 hours of time. So we'll keep you posted. If there's any breaks on that action, we'll let you know. Chris, in other exciting news, Donald Trump returned to the courtroom today to watch his once admired fixer, the guy who said he would take a bullet for the former president. They watched him up on the witness stand again. I heard the cross-examination this afternoon was brutal because Michael Cohen is an actual adjudicated liar.
Yeah, which the cross-examination should be. Michael Cohen has absolutely no credibility whatsoever. He's been on both sides of the lies that he has told. When I hear court critics talk about, court watchers talk about this case, they say that they admit Michael Cohen is a troubled witness because of his lies, but they claim there's plenty of documentation to back up his statements, to corroborate it. But still, Michael Cohen is a liar. Here on Fox News here, the headline, Michael Cohen admits he wants to see Trump convicted. In cross-examination, we heard Stormy Daniels the other day say that she hated Donald Trump and wanted to see him convicted. So I think the cross-examination is going well to destroy the credibility of people who have questionable credibility.
That's true. And I heard several legal experts today commenting on this 17th day of this Trump trial, of this alleged hush money case. And Chris, you know what all of them said? There has still been zero evidence or facts as to Trump and records and bookkeeping violations. They still have yet to show evidence of a crime. It's all just been Trump's a bad guy. We don't like him. There's all this tawdry sex. Michael Cohen's the fixer, but there has been zero evidence tying Trump to an actual criminal offense.
I think the case is basically, look, Michael Cohen is your attorney. He set up a non-disclosure agreement between you and him. Basically, it was really between Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels on behalf of Donald Trump. Michael Cohen is an attorney. He works for you. You paid him to put this NDA together, which is a legal instrument. To me, that's legal work. Mm-hmm. And they put it down in the books as a legal expense. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty cut and dry to me to talk about a campaign violation and bringing up misdemeanors from cases where the statute of limitations has run out is just a monumental stretch.
Mm-hmm. And Chris, it's funny you bring up the, I'm glad you reminded me of this, something I wanted to mention today, and you reminded me of it. With Michael Cohen's testimony, because the cross-examination will be able to put into evidence that Michael Cohen is an actual previously adjudicated liar, that will go to his credibility. And one of the jury instructions that the jury will get at the end of this case before they deliberate, the judge will more likely than not tell them that if the jury finds any part of Michael Cohen's testimony to be not credible or not believable, then they have the right to disbelieve any or all of his testimony.
You know, I think everyone probably believes that former President Trump probably had relations with Stormy Daniels. I don't think that's a secret. But from a legal standpoint, does it hurt or help his case if he would have just admitted that, yes, I did have relations with Stormy Daniels? That if he just came out and admit that, does that help or hurt the case, do you think?
I think they admitted that fact. I don't think they got into the, they didn't get into
Daniels the, never, Donald's been like, I ain't,
No, the lawyers did.
Okay.
The lawyers admitted there was an affair.
Okay.
You're right. They did not admit.
Because Donald's going down to the grave saying, I did not.
They did not admit the details of the affair. But Chris, your point is valid. A lot of this, but see, whether or not he admits that, that's not the crime.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
And paying her off is not a crime. They're trying to say that by falsifying business records under a New York State misdemeanor, that was used to cover up some it still yet to be named federal elections offense.
Yeah.
Number one, Bragg doesn't have jurisdiction over the FEC. The FEC declined to take this case. And number three, they still haven't proven it.
Yeah, that's why I'm just wondering, would a jury be more inclined or the public be more inclined to say, okay, yeah, he had sex with her. He admitted it. What's the big deal?
You know what my prediction
is? Instead of Donald Trump screaming from the hilltops, quicking and scratching, I did not have relations with this woman. Would it sway the jury or the public opinion?
I can give you part of the defense's summary conclusion right now. I can give you their summation. They're going to say, the lawyers, even though Donald Trump may never say these words, the lawyers on their summation for the defense, they're going to say, you know what? Donald Trump had an affair. That is not in dispute. Donald Trump paid this money. That is not in dispute. Neither of those things are crimes, nor are they criminal offenses. They're going to say that. They're going to say, Alvin Bragg has failed to prove to you that there was a criminal offense committed in this case. That's what they're going to say. Yeah. I think that's what the lawyers are going to say on summation. And they're going to be exactly right. We're still waiting, going into the 18th day of this trial, to hear any evidence of Donald Trump committing a crime that he was charged with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a process crime that they have made up, and you have to, basically, it's a Rube Goldberg contraption to get to the crime, and hopefully, as we know, there are two attorneys that are on the case, and hopefully they see through this and will be the two or one that hangs this up. We know it's an overwhelming Democratic jury, probably, but hopefully the lawyers on the case will do the right thing.
That's with the mousetrap thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The Rube Goldberg thing with the mouse and the hamster wheel.
Yeah,
and
they get to something simple. It goes all around and around and about and looks like a Rube Goldberg.
I bet producer Joey V has designed several of those.
It looks like
lifetime.
A Rube Goldberg a little bit, doesn't it?
Of course, you watch the Pee Wee Herman movie. What was it? His Big Adventure.
And yes.
I think he has a whole setup to get pancakes made by the time he wakes up.
So that's a Rube Goldberg.
I tried to do that, burnt the house down. Movies are bad for you. That's what I learned.
There you go. All right. Well, that's producer Joey V, Chris Arps, and I here as well this afternoon here on this Tuesday, May 14th. We're going to be joined by David Stokes next, Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute, talk about temp tag loans and Metrolink expansion costs.
And before we go to break, Tim and I, for the first time. Did a little television today. Tam, you want to let everyone know what we did today?
We are going to be appearing on an upcoming episode of the Judge Mike Carter Show. I think he calls it, does he call it Justice and the Judge or something of that sort?
Judge Carter and Justice.
He tweeted,
I just had it here too.
Go to our Twitter feed, because Chris just reposted, and I think I'll repost it as well. I just saw, here it is. Go to @VoteForCarter, number 4. Go @VoteForCarter. Justice and Journalism. There we go. Justice and Journalism of Judge Mike Carter, and you'll see the beautifully, overly ostentatious KMOV studios we were in. And Chris and I were one of the sets of featured guests today for an upcoming episode. It was exciting.
It was. So I'm going to give Judge Mike Carter a shout out there, and watch his show on Sunday. We'll have more information what the time is and everything to look at, but enjoyed it today. Thank you, Judge Mike Carter.
Mm-hmm. Was it like a cliffhanger episode where we don't know if we
can't
die?
I can't tell you. I can't tell you. I've been sworn to secrecy.
The
contract.
We take off on a hot air balloon.
Who knows
or something
where
at
they
the
went?
End. You'll have to watch it and find out. Well, you're going to want to stand by to listen and to watch this, because maybe you're watching us on Rumble, Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. That's where we stream. I always say we're a lot more than a radio station. Yep, we do the radio stuff as well, but we're a media company. You can watch us, you can follow us, you can stream us. David Stokes will be joining us live next. He's the Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute. Chris and I are going to ask him about temp tag loans, Metrolink expansion costs, and another proposed sales tax hike by St. Louis Public Schools. Oh, never enough money for the educrats. All that and more when we return on the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show, 101.9 94.1 News Talk, STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
St. Louis is using $350,000 of the city's budget to loan St. Louis drivers money for insurance and sales tax to get up-to-date plates so they don't have to pay it all at once.
What we want folks to walk away with is not just updated tags and insurance, but an understanding, a better financial literacy, a better financial education, so we can avoid this going into the future.
So the city is still trying to find a vendor or a company to take this program on, and once they do that, they'll be able to explain more about how these loans will work, and we'll make this as accessible as possible.
4:26, and welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Arb Show. Tim, that Rams settlement money is just burning a hole in the city of St. Louis's pockets, and you can almost smell the smoke from here, out here in the county.
I can't believe they still have any of it left. I mean, is it in a bank account somewhere? How haven't they spent it already, right?
Unbelievable. And we'll talk with our next guest about that and other issues.
David Stokes over at the Show Me Institute.
In high school, you talk about spikes. I had a very short spiked.
It was spiked. I knew there was some spike somewhere in that stuff.
It wasn't very punky. It was more Leave It to Beaver-ish, maybe.
And as he does every Tuesday at this time, David Stokes, Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute. David, if I have this correctly, if you are behind on your temporary plates, the city of St. Louis will quote-unquote loan you the money so that you can get your get your tags up to date, get your insurance up to date, and they will provide you financial literacy to make sure this is happening into the future, basically telling you that when you buy a car, you're going to be responsible for taxes after you purchase that car. I assume that will be part of the financial literacy. Your thoughts on this, sir?
This is going from the sublime to the absurd as we get here. And if the people in the program actually learn the economics and financial literacy, what they'll learn is a pretty basic rule of economics that when you subsidize something, it costs more. So if people go into this knowing they're going to get a $500 loan to pay the sales taxes, they'll probably spend $500 more on a car.
Did you do loan in air quotes, David?
Right, loan, right. Because, yeah. I mean, clearly the people who aren't paying the sales taxes on their car, which is money owed to the government, why would they then pay back a loan they get from the government to register the car? This makes no sense. This is taking tax dollars from taxpayers to give to people to help other people pay their taxes. I mean, it's the most absurd circular program I've ever heard in my life, except that people aren't actually going to repay these loans, and so you're going to help people get the cars registered, which is a good thing, certainly, except why would you possibly believe that, that the people who can't even register their car in the first place? And I was driving around the city earlier today, saw multiple unregistered cars blowing lights and the like just when I went to lunch. Why would you assume that they're getting insurance, gonna renew their car, renew those tags in a year or two, or do anything of that sort? I mean, this is a just ridiculous program that I predict will have zero impact on anything.
You know, David, when Democrats talk about cradle, you know, well, maybe it's Republicans that talk about Democrats with the cradle to grave mentality that Democrats have. Well, if you're lucky to be born, right? That's just my editorial about Democrats. But, you know, once you are born, it seems that Democrats, they want to place you into this cradle to grave mentality. Big mommy, big daddy government just doing everything for you. I mean, David, this is a bad idea for human nature, right? I mean, philosophically, I mean, this basically tells people they don't have to be accountable or responsible for anything, even something as simple as having proper license plates after they buy a car, right?
Absolutely. And this is, I'm writing a post on this for showmeinstitute.org that'll hopefully be up in the next day or two. It's not up now, so I don't crash our system with rushing to our website right now. It's not up yet. But I'm going to talk about that, how this new progressive leadership in the city of St. Louis these past couple of years is just tripling down on giving away tax dollars to people and just taking away as much personal responsibility as you can. There's an article in the Post-Dispatch today that, not changing the topic, it directly relates to this topic about how, you know, the program that they instituted several months ago to help renters who are being evicted. They're going to take tax dollars to intervene in a civil dispute between private parties and start helping renters avoid being evicted. So again, taking sides in a private matter with tax dollars, which is a terrible, terrible idea. I mean, the idea that landlords can't evict people who aren't paying rent is preposterous. So, but they're taking tax dollars to do this, but as the Post article says, they're managing the whole program so poorly, they're going to be able to help a lot less people, a lot fewer people than they originally thought. And that's probably the same thing with this $350,000 program to pay people's registration fees. Mm. So you've got to hire a vendor, you've got to go out for bid. I'm sure that process will take months and months, if not years. Mm. And in the end, they'll help, again, help in air quotes, very few people. And it makes you start to wonder whether programs like their guaranteed income program, they also started in the city of St. Louis, which is an atrocious idea, to just send people checks with no oversight, no accountability, no nothing. And now helping evictions and now paying people's registration fees for their cars. It's like you're taking the personal responsibility out of as many things as so many as they can. And the only saving grace is that they are going to, due to the lack of management skills, they're going to be doing a poor job of doing it. So it's almost like, what do you root for there? So it's just very, very, very upsetting to see. And of course you then wonder whether the fact that there's a major mayoral race just under a year from now, God forbid that might have anything to do with some of these programs.
We're speaking with David Stokes, Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute. David, if you allow me, I want to play devil's advocate for just a moment here. Proponents of this will say, hey, we're going to have safer vehicles on the road because these folks have to get vehicle inspections. That's good for everyone. This lowers citizens' anger against these people that are driving around with temporary plates that are 2 and 3 years old. That may cut back on road rage incidents. Who knows? And third, and you alluded to it, does this help Deshaun Jones buy votes for the election next year? Could you address those three issues, sir?
Sure, and let me start with the first one. Look, I get it, but I don't think most of these cars have to go through an inspection. Most of these cars have just been purchased from a dealer. So the dealer will have, whether they're new cars or probably in most cases used cars, the dealer will have done that in inspection. So I don't think that there's any improvement in safety by getting properly registered cars on the road. That is a matter with renewing plates in the future, 2 years down the line, when that used car gets has to get its plates renewed and those new tags on. I was just at the DMV on Friday getting new tags because my tags were stolen somewhere. I don't want to say they were stolen in the city. In fairness, I don't know where they were stolen. They could have been stolen in my driveway in University City or where I was working or eating or in the city. They could have been stolen at Chesterfield watching my kids play sports for all I know. But I was at the DMV to register those tags. And sure, so you've taken tax dollars to help people register their car. What is the idea that people who aren't properly registering their car in the first place are going to renew those tags in 2 years? I would say those odds are very, very low. And while that might be less obvious that a tag is expired than the temporary tags, which have a date on them, I don't really think it's any better of a situation. So I don't think this is going to make anything safer. It's just like the red light cameras that they've reapproved in the city of St. Louis. I'd love to be wrong about this. I definitely want driving around our entire region, especially parts of the city, to get safer. We see the traffic violence and the mayhem every day driving around our office in the West End. But I stringently doubt that the people blowing red lights at 40 miles an hour with generally expired or temporary plates, that they're going to care about getting a ticket in the mail. And that's going to affect them zero.
Mayor Tish?
I have no faith that any of these things are going to help anything. If I'm wrong, and you can prove me that I'm wrong, I will gladly admit it. And I hope I am wrong. I just don't see it.
Quick follow-up, Dave. Very quick follow-up. How in the world were your license plates tags stolen? They make those things almost impossible to steal now. How did that happen? That's crazy.
Well, I didn't cut them up or probably, you know, I guess living in my bubble where I think I can have tags on my plate that aren't swiped. But a couple weeks ago, one morning it came out and all of a sudden my plates are showing 2021 tags. So somehow they'd been stolen. And it's only $8 to renew stolen tags. So it only took a few minutes. I'll give a shout out to the people at the Clayton DMV office. Did a very nice job, but definitely very, very frustrating. And talking to people around the office, many of whom at Show Me Institute live in the city of St. Louis, it is, of course, a common occurrence for people.
So, David, another story, speaking of government trying to subsidize something which will likely make it more costly and work less better. David, another story, these two paragraphs from this other STL Today story here just show, you know, the disaster that is the city of St. Louis. So the St. Louis Public Schools Board on Monday voted to oppose a proposed sales tax hike in the city for early childhood education. Okay, good. And they actually cited the increased burden on low-income families and a lack of oversight in the spending. So at least they're honest about it. But David, several hours later, child care and public school advocates sparred during an aldermanic hearing for a bill that would place a half-cent tax increase on the November ballot for early childhood education. First of all, David, I'm glad to see that there's some common sense that prevails amongst the educrat establishment in the city of St. Louis, but the Board of Aldermen seems to want to override them. I'm going to assume that you also think this is a horrible, terrible, no good idea.
Yes, I do. And it's something that I got to admit, we're trying to learn a lot more about it here at Show Me Institute quickly. It seems a very, very bad idea. We'd heard that it was coming, but we hadn't heard it was on up for a committee hearing so quickly. So we weren't able to get testimony in, which I would have loved to have done. In the next week or two, we'd love to get testimony to the full Board of Aldermen, if we can, and we should be able to, and that'll be up at showmeinstitute.org. This is a very troubling idea of adding a new sales tax to be distributed by a very unaccountable mental health board, and then it's going to largely for-profit businesses, for-profit daycares, basically, who are then going to have some of their services, not all, but some indirect services which can be used tax dollars for, they're going to be paid by shoppers and residents of the city of St. Louis. It's just crazy, as I understand it. And it's sort of like an issue we're having more and more of around the state, where counties, there's all these silly state authorizations to pass these local taxes for children's services and mental health funds and others. There's a couple others. It's just a way to mandate charity through taxation, mm-hmm. all the while politicizing charity in the first place, which is a terrible, terrible idea, to politicize charitable giving by creating boards who will then distribute the funds. So it's highly, highly troubling, and we're going to get something up at showmeinstitute.org about it. There's a similar thing happening in Kansas City, in Platte County, just north of Kansas City, as well. It looks like if it makes the ballot, all that's going to happen is it's going to be put on the November ballot for the city residents to vote on. So we do have a lot more time to talk about it, but I don't think it's a beneficial idea to put it on the ballot either. Again, this is a tax increase to then be spent by an unaccountable appointed board for private, mostly for-profit businesses to then spend. This is one, you know, strange bedfellows and all, but this is one case where I think the education establishment in the city of St. Louis is right with their concerns, and definitely look forward to talking a lot more about this with you guys in the coming months.
Finally, David, another story where it seems the St. Louis Rams settlement money is burning a hole in the pants of the St. Louis City mayor. The Post Dispatch had a story today about the city. It's hired private lawyers to help people who are being evicted from their homes and their apartments. Unfortunately, that fund is running out of money. Is this the place for the government to be doing this? And what if you're a landlord and here's your government is basically helping people stay in your apartments, your place, for rent free?
Absolutely.
Something about that just doesn't sit right.
It's a terrible idea, and I touched on it very briefly when we were talking about the tags thing, because it's another example of city government now just using tax money to expand the welfare state, essentially, to say we're going to use tax dollars to help people who are being evicted, who, in I would say almost every case, are simply not paying their rent, and I don't know why landlords have to continue to house people who aren't paying the rent. Now they're going to use tax dollars to take sides in this fight. This is a civil matter between private parties. It's completely inappropriate for city government to spend tax dollars taking sides in this matter. And for the city to do it is just appalling. You know, they passed a source of income rule a few years ago requiring landlords in the city to accept housing vouchers, even though that's a federal voluntary program. So landlords now have to accept housing vouchers, and if they try to evict somebody, voucher or no voucher, is not paying, the city's going to give tax dollars for free lawyers to the people to fight their eviction. So, you know, why would you be a landlord? Landlords are going to be like cops in the city of St. Louis, where the first question you ask is, why would you ever put yourself through that? Why would you ever put yourself through the abuse and the antipathy towards you? So it's a terrible, terrible idea. And again, the saving grace, as shown in the story, is that the city management of the program is so poor that they're going to only be able to help, in air quotes again. I think we're setting an air quote record for this show. They're only going to be able to help a small number of people. So thank God for it, because the city shouldn't be involved in this program in the slightest.
David, with barely 72 hours left in the Missouri legislative session, one of the bills that is likely not going to get across the finish line was one that we talked about quite a bit earlier on in session, and that was the elimination of the city earnings tax. David, that would be something that would actually help all residents and business owners in the city of St. Louis, wouldn't it? And number two, what a shame it's not going to get across the finish line, but that's something we should not give up on, because that would be major systemic positive change for the very troubled city of St. Louis, wouldn't it?
It would be, and unfortunately, it doesn't even appear they're going to get across the finish line. The further clarification that the city can't collect earnings taxes on remote work. I thought that was going to be an easy thing to get across the finish line this year, and I would love to be wrong, and I'll give, if I'm wrong and that gets finally passed in both houses by Friday, I'll give full credit where it's due. But the city is going to go on collecting earnings taxes on remote work, which is completely illegal and improper, until courts finally tell them that they can no longer do that. Some courts have already told them that, but apparently they're going to keep appealing as long as they can.
We've been speaking with David Stokes, Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute. You can reach him on the showmeinstitute.org, author/David Stokes, and on X, David C. Stokes. David, thank you so much for joining us, as always, and I look forward to speaking with you again next Tuesday, my friend.
Great talking to both of you, Chris. You got my name right, wrong in a couple spots there at the end. You've only known me for 25 years. I don't know why you'd get the name right.
Always
a my friend.
Always a critic.
Great talking with both of you.
Always a critic. Thank you, David, so much.
See you guys.
Thank you, David.
Got some breaking news here.
Yes, sir.
Tim, that was texted to me. Senator Elaine Goodman from Jefferson County represents
Gannon.
Iron Reynolds. Yeah, Gannon, St. Genevieve, Washington, and part of Jefferson County. She has broke her foot, and it's unknown if she will be able to remain there to vote. That means the Senate GOP cannot PQ the Dems on IP. So, breaking story there. One of our good listeners there sent that over to me, so we scooped everyone. Senator Gannon has broken her foot.
Put a boot on that foot and drive her back to the Capitol.
There you go.
You got to be kidding me. I mean, if Dr. Bob Onder needs to go down and put a boot on it and drive her up, I know he'll do that. This is a critical.
Tim, where's your compassion?
I have none for generational change. Chris, we all have aches and pains. A broken foot is not a heart attack. She should get up after the Capitol. Yeah. This is her last few days. She's not running for re-election. She's decided not to run again.
Yes.
So she could be part of history if she so chose.
Maybe she had her foot up the Democrats behind. Kicking them in behind all night, all evening, and she broke her foot off in one of the Democrats' behinds and broke her foot.
Maybe
Dang it.
Maybe that's what happened. That's our story, and we're sticking to
that's
it.
That's the story we're sticking with. At 4:46, when we come back, I'm going to show how the Trump trials are contrasting against these Democratic trials, and it may be making the president look better. Well, I'll expound more on that when we come back. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL, number one for live and local conservative talk.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
President Trump is a friend, and I wanted to be here to support him. I'm here speaking with you outside because the court won't allow us to speak inside the building. That's just one of the many things that are wrong here. This is the fifth week that President Trump has been in court for this sham of a trial. They are doing this intentionally to keep him here and keep him off of the campaign trail. And I think everybody in the country can see that for what it is. I'm an attorney. I'm a former litigator myself. I am disgusted by what is happening here. Now, 8 years later, suddenly they've resurrected this thing. They brought it back. And why is that? It's painfully obvious that we are now 6 months out from an election day.
4:52 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, and that is Speaker Johnson, one of the many surrogates, Tim, who were outside of the courthouse in Manhattan this week speaking on the president's behalf. He's speaking words that we all believe, that this is a witch hunt, that these trials are politically motivated to hurt Donald Trump, the leading presidential candidate in the race right now against the president. It is nakedly obvious.
It is. And he made a really good point about a certain factor involving this case, which should lead everyone to the conclusion that this case should never have started in the first place. Chris, the statute of limitations ran on these charges years ago. And Alvin Bragg keeps talking about how he's going to make these charges that have been suffered to have run to the statute of limitations, how he's going to make them a felony. He says, well, I'm going to tie it to a yet to be named, we're in the 18th day of the trial, yet to be named federal elections violation. The FEC, the Federal Elections Authority, looked at the complaint and dismissed it. So the whole thing is a complete house of cards that never should have been dealt to begin with.
You listen to the Democrats' narrative on January 6th. Donald Trump tried to steal our democracy down in Mar-a-Lago. He withheld the classified documents that somehow foreign governments could have got a hold of, with the same charges are in Georgia that he tried to steal democracy. And the case in, of course, in New York, which is basically a campaign violation. I think these current trials of some of these high profile Democrats highlight just how insignificant and how silly the Trump charges are. And we'll talk about that next on Chris's Corner.
Chris.
And if you don't know, now you know.
And now, Chris's Corner.
I just gave you a summary of the 94 charges against Donald Trump in his four trials. If you really look at the charges, they aren't really that serious. But if you look at some of the charges that have been leveled against some prominent Democrats lately, I think it makes a very interesting contrast to these charges against Donald Trump. Let's start first with Henry Cuellar. He is the Texas Democrat down by the border who is very pro-life and has not voted with the Democrats on some of their key issues. He has a case that is brought up against him. He is being accused of being an agent for Azerbaijan, the country that's by Afghanistan. He is supposedly working as an agent for the Azerbaijan Oil and Gas Company. One of the ways that they got around this deal was his wife receiving quote-unquote fake consulting contracts. That's a pretty serious deal when you are a congressman for the United States of America and you're working for a foreign government and you are not letting authorities know that and you are making decisions that could affect that government. That's pretty serious. Let's look at the second high-profile case. Well, this is Senator Menendez in New Jersey. We've all laughed at him. We've heard the stories of him having gold bars sewn into his suit pockets, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of cash that are found in his suit closets and in safes. We hear about his wife receiving a brand new Mercedes-Benz. We hear Menendez's excuse that the reason why he has such large amounts of cash in his home because his parents immigrated from Cuba, and there in Cuba, I say it like they said, Cuba, a lot of the property was confiscated, so he always had that mentality that he needs to have his wealth in his home. The third high-profile case is Eric Adams, the mayor of New York. He has been a vocal critic of the Biden administration's immigration policy, and it's just coincidentally he has been under investigation for his past campaign. Some of his aides have been questioned for taking campaign contributions from, guess what, just like in the prior two cases, a foreign government working as a foreign agent. So when you look at these cases between Adams, Menendez, and Cuellar, you're like, wow, these are some pretty serious charges. These are members of the United States government. Some of these people on pretty high-profile committees that have the juice to influence decisions of our government are taking bribes. And here we have the former president of the United States with the charges that they're charging him with look pretty flimsy in comparison. But these serious charges against these three Democrats, of course, are not getting as much attention. I kind of alluded to it, and I believe it, that the reason the Justice Department are going after these three men is because they have not been on the Joe Biden train. And so they are going after them through the arm of the law, using lawfare against the Democrats. I guess turnabout is fair play when you're trying to take out Joe Biden. And that is Chris's Corner. At 5:07, we're going to have the speaker's stump speech. And at 5:24, we're going to speak to the good doctor, Dr. Randy Tobler. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk, STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.